All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to FAT Public Access, broadcasting here from iBeam. My name is Bennett Williamson. I've been your host this week, and I will continue to be your host throughout the week here with our sort of alternative programming stream. We've got some more great performances coming up. We've got a great lecture tomorrow from Ben Sisto. So stay tuned, check out the FAT website for everything that's upcoming. Right now we have from Philadelphia in the United States, Eric Ricky Laska here. Thanks for coming, Ricky.
Thanks for having me.
So tonight you're gonna be you've brought the long cable, which is it's sort of like a platform or a system as much as it is a piece. It's a tool, is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's pretty, it can be used in a number of different contexts. It's 500 feet of XLR cable, which is what they actually, it's the largest spool you can buy of XLR cable that I was able to find. And I haven't used it as much as I want to use it, but it's all purpose, so there's really no limit to what can be used with the cable.
Excellent. Do you want to start demonstrating the cable as we're interviewing?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it has a lot of slack. And actually, if
did you bring someone?
Yeah, this is Steven. He's going to demonstrate just how long this cable actually is. So
how was your trip, man?
500 feet is no joke.
I'm going to get on the camera.
Sure.
And we'll try to follow you around here for the web viewers.
So I think we often lose sight of the fact that, or we take distance for granted, rather, with the internet and the way we're able to communicate through time and space. And I think with the long cable, it's really a visual articulation of just how far short distances actually are. So 500 feet is not so long in the scheme of distance, I think, when you're communicating with someone, even within the same state, you're talking about miles and miles, and this is actually just 500 feet, which is a space can be 500 feet, but once you actually see that, I don't know, it has implications, I think, for the way we think about sound and the way we think about information and all that.
It seems like your music and sort of the audio projects you've been doing recently have been addressing ideas of space in a lot of different ways. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think sound is contingent on space and time. It's, you can't have sound without space or time. They're all one and the same. So to me, working with space is an extension of working with sound. And this project in particular, I didn't think about too deeply before I actually bought the cable. It was kind of an impulse buy. And then now I have 500 feet.
Wait,
of
how do you impulse buy 500 feet of cable?
It's pretty cheap. Like I want to do this for my life. Like I want to like buy cables and just make different length cables.
Wait, but who did you buy this from? Because like, didn't you have to buy it from a guy that does that?
I just bought the spool, man. I made the cable. It was like a raw spool of XLR. And I have a friend who makes snakes. Like, he makes studio snakes for a living. And
what is that for someone that might not be familiar?
It's essentially the wiring of studios. So it's just cables. It's not that interesting on its own, but depending on the studio, the snake will be different, depending on where the different devices need to be in the room.
Was XLR like the obvious choice? Like, why XLR?
it's grounded, so I can make a long cable, and you won't hear noise. It's balanced. I've been corrected.
That's fine, man. You're the one with the 500-foot XLR cable. People can talk
it
all they
it
want,
has
but...
The, it has the third prong, which is a balance.
So what's going on in Philly, man?
Not too much. Easier living, cheaper rent. I wonder if we can get there with this.
It's 99 miles to Philly. Don't you remember the name of that cheesesteak place?
Does that still exist?
I don't know. Does that place still exist? Our sources say, oh, yeah. That's right. Our friend Borna used to work there.
Yeah, so this cable is actually, it has a zero perceptual latency. So essentially, if I play a sound through this cable when it's spread out all the way, you won't notice any difference, which I think also puts into perspective just, you know, the sort of distances that we deal with on a regular basis, because 500 feet in the scheme of things is not very long.
I was actually curious about that. You made a video for this piece that sort of featured you playing these sort of like echoing sort of popping sounds.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe some of that had to do with the length of the cable, the quality of the sound, but apparently you're saying it doesn't at all. Like, how far would you have to go to have the cable play into what you're hearing?
I'm not 100% on... I think that is dependent on material. So the material that I'm using here, obviously 500 feet is not enough to have any impact on the way we perceive the sounds transmitting through it. But in that video, actually, the sound output is in a different space than the sound input. So that's sort of what I'm showing. The sound output is actually in a warehouse space, so it's rather reverberant. The sound input space is an office space, so the acoustics are kind of bland and kind of just not very interesting at all. But the cable is just connecting the two, input and output.
I don't know, I feel like I tried to ask this, but what sort of got you to the cable? Like, what, I mean, you studied music and sound, right? And I don't know, what have you been working on recently that sort of like, have you been moving away from like instrumentation, or I don't know what got you to, this is a funny materialistic way to deal with music.
Yeah,
or sound, and I'm just curious how you got there.
I think it's a visual way to deal with sound, because sound lives in material, so we don't usually think about the visual component to sound, but the material component to sound has a visual component, and in this case, it's all internal to the cable, but I think when we actually extend the cable, I mean, most people who have used audio in some way have worked with XLR cables and microphones, and I don't think we think much about how the sound is transmitted, but it is being transmitted, and I think if we were to do something simple like have a musician or a performer in one place, in one side of the room, and then have the speakers on the other side of the room, but have the connections be connected, you would really see just how sound lives in material and how that's not something that we normally think about when we hear sound.
It's funny, it's like, it reminds me of like when bands play on the floor instead of playing on the stage, you know?
Totally. And what does that do in your experience? What has that done to the way that you feel about the performance? Does it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like a classic sort of way to subvert the like audience performer relationship, right?
It's more intimate, right?
Yeah, or like more threatening, you know? I don't know. I think some of our friends here tonight have spent time in like Providence and maybe know what I'm talking about, like being at some crazy noise show or something like that. But yeah, it's makes you more self-conscious, I guess, as to the environment in which the sound and the event is happening. It makes, yeah, just like, instead of losing yourself in the image as you would at like a movie or a play, it makes you very conscious instead of exactly where you are and who's around you.
Yeah, definitely, it has that effect. And then in the case of streaming, I think we lose sight of distance and the distances that information travels altogether.
What about that streaming project you did recently? Didn't you do an audio streaming project?
Which one was that?
You
have to remind me of my own project.
No problem. Where you were streaming the sounds of your laptop streaming.
Oh yeah. That's a few years.
I think it's a few years back at this point.
I think the one you're thinking of it was actually, yeah, where I streamed. I put a pickup on my laptop and streamed that to Berlin.
Yeah.
That was a few years back, but I thought that was interesting because there was kind of a voyeuristic element to that, where I was actually on my computer while, you know, the sound that was being heard in a gallery space was just the internal workings of my computer, the electromagnetic sounds of the computer. So if I would look at a video or listen to music, the sounds would change, and the people on the other end had no, they were completely disconnected from that reality. So I think it was interesting for that reason. But I think the distance probably added to the disconnectedness of the whole experience.
Interesting. So this is like a way of adding distance but trying to create awareness or like bring people together. I don't know. That's a broad stroke.
I think it is about making an audience aware of distance. I think when I so the inspiration for this piece, as I mentioned earlier, was that I saw that I could buy a raw spool of XLR cable. So I didn't think much about what I wanted to do with that spool until I bought it. And then when I bought the spool, I just put two ends on either end of the cable. And then I started to think more about the implications of distance and sound and the way that sound actually hits you, and not over long distances or short distances, but very short distances. And all sound is, you know, shaped by its physical parameters, by the physical reality of where the sound is happening. So I started to think more about sound quality. And if you look at an instrument, I mean, let's take a trumpet, for example. You know, sound is being pushed through material, and it's shaped by the material that it's being pushed through. So what we call in music timbre is actually just a sound quality. And really, I started thinking about the distances that sound had to traverse in order to get to your ear. And even once it's in your ear, then there are even physical things that can happen to change the quality of the sound. But it really opened up, I think, the view that sound quality is really just distance. And
in a way, this is like a giant instrument.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
So this is essentially, the sound is not determined based on the instrument, but the sound is affected by the distance, and the sound is dependent on the distance.
You've also described it as like a tool, and on the site for the long cable, you've said that if anyone's interested in using it, they can get in touch with you. Yeah, who's the target exactly?
Yeah,
thank you, Jeff.
If you want, So that's the other thing. Like I don't want to give away the long cable because I probably won't make it again. But if you want to borrow it, you can email me, and I guess we'll like arrange. I'll drop it off at your house. You could use it.
What would you hope? Like, what would you like to? Do you have any concerns about content in terms of what you would like people to use it for?
I don't know. I think if I should be open-minded. No one's contacted me about renting this, so I don't want to, you know, turn anyone off from renting it. If you have any ideas for it, get in touch. And we'll make an arrangement. You can use it. But yeah, essentially, I don't know. I didn't. It's not. It. I guess it's an art piece. It could potentially be worth something, but I think it, you know, maybe in keeping with the whole free art and technology, you know, ethos of the Fat Lab, it would make sense to not put any price on this and just rent it.
Oh, don't let the context of this exhibition try to cut into your money-making schemes. Like, I think it's all well and good if you rent it. I was just really intrigued by the fact that, like, this could be a service. You know what I mean? Most people hate cables, but, like, maybe someone out there really wants to deal with a really big cable. Maybe there's someone that's, like, really into, really fanatic about, like, nice cable slacking. Like, someone who's really OCD about, like, getting the right... I guess this is a sub-question. Mm-hmm. Maybe for anyone that's worked in, like, theater or... music, you know, there's this feeling that like there's a right and wrong way to like gather a cable. And Steven, I'm not trying to put you on trial here, but you know what I mean? Is there such thing, like what's up with that? The natural wind of a cable or?
Not for this cable.
But is that a thing that
you... I think there are cable rules, yeah.
Is that a thing that you found in your research? Like, you know, in terms of finding the natural coil, the way the cable wants to go? Is that a thing or is that just like a myth of like, teachers.
It's an engineering thing. I actually work around cables in my day job. I work in IT. And if you can, I mean, you can break a cable easily. And a common thing that happens is a part of the cable will be stepped on or something. So you need to turn it in a specific way for it to work, or else, for the most part, that broken part of the cable will affect the rest of the cable. But I guess each cable is different. So, especially with digital cables, I feel like if they're broken, they're basically broken. But something like an XLR cable is actually analog. So, you could find a way. Like if a part of this cable was broken, I don't think the whole cable would be useless.
Have you found any sweet cable forums?
What's that?
Have you found any sweet cable forums online?
Kind of far away, like it's a little louder.
I don't know if you've done any research. Maybe you've found some forums on the internet, like internet forums.
Oh, yeah.
People that are into cables.
I didn't look into that too deeply. I think it was more once I made this cable, I thought about just making cables, and I think there's kind of something transgressive in that, like. That everything is wireless, but the cable kind of, it literally grounds you. It's a physical grounding for information transmission.
Yeah, and in a way, like a lot of art and even some of the music that you make is sort of rule-based, right? Like there's a limitation. There's like literally a physical limitation, or maybe you program some limitations into like a patch that you write or something. Mm-hmm. It's all about setting up conditions and then letting it go, if I'm remembering my like art history classes right here.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like algorithmic music is all based on parameters. And I think when you're working in the digital realm, you kind of take that for granted too, that you kind of don't think about physical reality as much, even though everything you're doing is an emulation of physical tenants.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think maybe this touches on your server room recording project.
A little bit, yeah. I think, I mean, that...
Just in the sense of, like, thinking that there's no connections, thinking that everything is ethereal, and then you did the series of recordings inside server rooms. It's sort of... Did some of that thought, like, was that some of what you're thinking about when you made those?
Yeah, we're discovering a trend here in my work, in the physical side of the seemingly non-physical. I think the internet is generally thought of as this ether, but it has physical material components.
Do you want to talk about the piece you're gonna perform tonight?
Sure. Do you think it's a good idea to if anyone has any questions, then
yeah.
If not,
yeah, let's take some questions.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm just curious about the format that you received the raw. You talked a lot about the raw XLR, and I'm sort of I have this image in my mind of like XLR is a natural growth. Like XLR grows somewhere, and you talked about how you just bought the largest spool that you could buy of raw XLR. What was that moment like when it came to your door? Did the person, was it a cable person who gave it to you when you unboxed it? What was the unboxing like? I guess that's what I'm curious about.
Thanks for the question. I mean, now thinking back on it, I think he might have been only a spool delivery man, because I was at my mom's house and I opened the door. And I was like waiting for this delivery, and I opened the door, and a guy was walking down the driveway holding a box that had the spool in it. So I was like, I was like, oh, maybe it came, and I opened the door, and he was there. So that must say something. I think it comes from China. I don't know. I think I'm probably proving my ignorance right now in just exactly what. Is an XLR cable, but there's something kind of nice and mythical about thinking about it as its own growth and as its own, something that is just natural. I mean, since we were, anyone in this room was alive, XLR cables have been a reality, so.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I know you were talking earlier about how you settled on the XLR format because it's balanced or grounded or whatever we decided it was. And I was basically wondering if you had considered making a similarly long cable in another format, specifically quarter inch, for guitar solos, long distance guitar solos.
I have, because as I said before, I think I want my life's work to be, I don't want to actually sell anything that is related to my art practice, I don't think. But if I could create some kind of vocation for myself based on an idea from my art practice, then I'll be satisfied. So if I could just be an artisan cable guy, I would do that. And you could write me in advance, you could come in person and ask for a specific length of a quarter inch cable. I have been thinking about for other projects though, doing digital cables, because I think that would actually do some interesting stuff with losing the signal. If you make an HDMI cable for instance too long, you'll get some lag, you'll get some packets, which I think is interesting. And it creates an indeterminate element, but I don't think they really make raw HDMI cable in like 500 feet, spools. So, what's that? Well, I think it's usually networked, but yeah, like if you're, well, let's say like. Yeah, totally. Well, I might have to actually, like, go a step further and not buy the cable, but, like, make it from scratch. Is that what you're saying? I'm open to that, definitely.
I think this angle on artisanal cable could be hot right now.
Yeah, actually, this is...
Bespoke?
Hopefully no one's watching this at home right now, because that's my idea, man. It's not a...
Are cables, like, safer? Like, are there instances where you would only use a cable because, like in the Pentagon, they're probably not sending shit over, like, Wi-Fi. Maybe they run, like, cable. Is that a thing? Like, is that... Like, when is cable better?
Yeah, I mean, it's point to point. So I would assume that it's harder to access the information that's coursing through this, you know, than the information that's coursing through a network and is, it has an impact in a larger realm. So I would assume. I honestly haven't looked into that too much. But
other questions?
Play some.
Yeah, do you want to talk about the piece you're going to?
Sure. So recently, I've been working a lot with White Noise, and that has, there's a lot of different angles that I approach White Noise with. But for the piece I'm going to be playing tonight, the White Noise is going to be going through a particular default in a particular type of filter that's called a lattice filter. And it's basically autonomous. So I set the default and I send the White Noise through the preset, and all the indeterminacies of the sound that are outputted are all original every time. So there's no I essentially can use the same setting different times, and it'll always sound a little bit different. The sound palette will be similar, but the pacing and the clusters of sound will be different. So it's pretty abstract. There's a lot of space. But yeah, and in taking a step back, my interest in White Noise has to do with my belief that white noise is an indicator of space. And if we want to go back to what we were saying about space and time and sound all being part of the same package. So I was brought to White Noise, and then, you know, in the performance context, you know, it's not always compelling to blast White Noise. You know, I think it's compelling, but I think that it's also interesting to show how dynamic something seemingly undynamic like White Noise is. So if you pass it through a filter, you're essentially getting a lot of rich sounds. And I mean, the filter sort of emulates physical characteristics. I mean, a space could be a filter, but in this case, it's just a digital emulation of a space. So,
all right, great. Yep. Oh wait, we got another question.
You talked in a previous session about what impulse blasts are, and I like that. But would you be able to describe how you came across the idea of impulse blasts the first time?
Sure. So what the audience member is alluding to is a piece I did called Impulse Blasts, where the inspiration was from a concert recording class I took in college, where we were in a theater, and the engineer went behind the curtain and pressed a button, and he blasted White Noise into a space. And the reason he did that was to test the impulse response of the space. So there was very scientific rationale for doing that. And I think everyone in the class kind of saw it as this ugly, annoying sound. But I saw it as sort of an interesting possibility, because he was using this sound in order to test the impulse response of a space, in order to see just how much decay there was in a space. And the first thing I thought was, that's interesting in a space that was designed for music of some sort, or some kind of sonic art. But wouldn't it be interesting to try to test the impulse response of any space, of any space that's either natural or engineered in some way? And so I created an application called Impulse Blast that's essentially a random white noise generator for any environment. So natural environment, you're obviously not going to hear any impulse response because there are no walls. Well, there could be walls, but probably no well-defined walls. So, yeah, sound is in all space, not just the spaces that it was designed for. So, I think that's part of that approach as well, is just considering sound in all contexts. And onto the sound.
Max son ocho retos, pero muy oportunos, muy bien ligados para producir ocho carreras y ganan el juego fácilmente 8-4.
Sí, así que los Max se preparan para el tercer juego de esta serie frente a los Padres de San Diego, juego diurno del día de mañana, donde
All right.
se espera que Dinucci pues siga marcando la pauta de los lanzadores de los
Thanks, let's hear it again for Ricky Lasca. Yeah. All right. Thanks for watching Fat Public Access on the Internet. Thank you all for coming out to iBeam tonight. We will continue with more programming tomorrow, starting around 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, chatting with some more members of Fat Lab, and then with some artist talks. We have a panel, Artists as Hackers, tomorrow night. James Powderly, Addie Wagenknecht, Evan Roth, a bunch of other heavy hitters going to be on that. Tune in. Got a great lecture from Ben Sisto, as I mentioned, called Who Let the Dogs Out Out, discussing the history of that song. And we'll also have a tech call-in show tomorrow night on IRC and on the phone if you want to call in, ask questions from IBM's technical director. You can do that. So thanks for watching Fat Public Access. I'm your host, Bennett Williamson, and we'll see you again soon on the internet. Thanks again, everybody.